All right, working class on DeerCast. We're here at Mark Jury's place. What's up, Mark?
Hey, guys. Thanks for coming over. This is exciting to have you here, Eric and Austin. This is your first time here. Yeah. Kurt's been here a few times. So
thanks for inviting us.
I always get excited to talk about deer hunting, especially when you're midsummer heading into deer
season. Oh, yeah. Yep. It's easy. We're past the 4th of July. That's like the turning point, don't you think?
For sure.
Like everyone's – guys who weren't really – you're always thinking about it, right? But – everyone that wasn't thinking about it is now really, really thinking about it. But now everybody feels rushed. I do anyway.
Absolutely.
Like, I feel like I'm behind on everything.
We haven't started and we already feel behind.
Right.
Well, that's how it is, exactly. But we're going to dive into a little bit of, you know, some food plot prep. And that's, like, part of the reason why I feel rushed a little, getting things up. We have some trips coming in, though, that are going to interrupt our summer. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't help. But, you know.
It is what it is.
It is what it is. You got to do it. So... what's new, Mark? What are you in the middle of?
You know, we're in the middle of DeerCast, essentially. I mean, it's hard to imagine that, you know, in 89 when Terry and I started this company out there with a camera and a VHS, you know, recorder or a super VHS, that here we are 33 years later and we're a tech company, you know.
Right.
Our developers tell us that all the time and we're like, we're not a tech company, you know, but in reality we are. I mean, things go wrong and you have to fix it immediately and it's just different than what we're used to. So it's been an interesting learning curve.
The cameras are probably 40 pounds lighter.
Oh yeah, cameras are lighter. Yeah, certainly. But you know, they're right here for a lot of what we can do. It's amazing how much you can get done with your mobile device. Anyway.
Right. Yeah, it is crazy to think of, like, the evolution of it. Because how long has DeerCast been around now to this point?
Well, this will be our fifth year, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
So a lot has changed in 5 years.
I think we tested it in 17, then went live we tested it for 2 years. So we went live in 19. 20, 21, this is our fourth year to the consumer.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's awesome. Yeah, it's crazy. Like, a lot has changed already just within DeerCast, you know, looking at the whole scope of Drury Outdoors from when you guys started. It's just crazy how things roll in and then keep going.
It's wildly different. And even today's offering within DeerCast, we had it in our minds, you know, 5-6 years ago, but it took that long to develop and to tweak and to get it where we wanted it. And we're so proud of where it landed.
Right? Yeah, well, it probably would have been a nightmare to, like, jump to where it's at now. You probably can't do all that stuff right in one shot. I mean, it takes time to grow.
Just the development of that, we started on that over 2 years ago to get it developed and where it works in all the different locations. And I mean, it's a complicated app in all reality. If you peel back every layer, you know, there's a lot of different things that it does between a social media feed, a media player, you know, the predictor, the shot placement with DeerCast Track, now maps, and then within maps, rain stations and wind direction and distance and area. I mean, it does a lot of different things, but that's what we wanted, and that's why we spent so much time and effort and blood and sweat and money trying to get it to where it's at.
Right.
But we're, you know, we wanted to make sure that when our app hit, it felt like deer hunters developed it and not developers developed it.
Right.
You know, and I'm not knocking anybody's app because there's some great apps out there, but we just feel like ours is a little easier to use and it's more applicable to what whitetail hunters want.
Yeah. You know? It's the ultimate deer tool. It really is.
Yeah. In terms of giving you all the advantages you can without, you know, prior to making that final decision where I'm sitting today or where I'm putting that plot or all that stuff.
Right.
You know, we feel like we really helped write the playbook for you a little bit.
For sure. What I think is great about it is, like, it's deer focused. You know what I mean? It's like other apps are, you know, you can use for everything across the board, but this is like specific scope on your spot and what you're doing. And like, just for anyone that's pressed on time, you know, you could use it. But we talked before a little bit where some people's problem with the, you know, I guess comments, people, I'm never going to let an app tell me whether to hunt or not. It almost like attacked people's egos. Like some guys, right? Not everybody. We're talking about the exception. Well, now it's like everybody can get in whether or not you want to be that guy on the internet. It's like, I'm not letting it tell me if I'm hunting or not. Well, now, okay, that's there if you want it.
Right.
But it's now has multi-layered, and it always has, but even more for that guy. They can't say anything anymore. It's got everything they need. But I'm sure they're still saying something.
Oh, yeah. Certainly they're going to, you know.
You're never going to get away from that.
Well, right. You know, it's the internet.
But. Yeah. But, you know.
It's not attacking egos to those guys anymore.
As much.
Does that make sense what I'm trying to say?
Yeah. We've got a version for them, too. There's a free version. So,
yeah, so chill out.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't feel like that got across. But anyway, it's like everything is
no,
there.
No, I get what you're saying.
It's yeah.
Like mine, you know.
The tough guys out there, you know.
Yeah.
Bless their hearts.
You know, it's the guy that says, where you want, the wind doesn't matter, you know. Well,
yeah.
There's all kinds of different thoughts. And it comes, and that's yeah. that's okay. That's cool. That's why we all get to go out there and hunt the way we want. And,
yeah. Right. Yeah,
you
exactly.
know, success is predicated on preparation, you know. And,
right.
And to me, it's not just – you know, practice, it's perfect practice, yields the best success. So,
for sure, yeah.
I think the more tools you have, the better the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And, right. and we try to really load the toolbox up with this offering. It's pretty exceptional.
Yeah, I love it, man. I'm excited to actually actively use it. I mean, there's a lot of uses for it right now, which mm-hmm. I want to get into, like especially for guys that are putting in food plots
no
or
doubt.
Little kill plots or whatever. Like right now, that's important stuff guys are going to use the app for in
well, if,
this time frame.
If for no other reason, I mean, I remember the days where I would walk the length this way and walk that way and then go into, you know, onto Google and try and figure out how many, you know, square yeah. feet in an acre and all that stuff. And
yeah.
now you just take our area deal and go around your plot, mm-hmm. whether it already exists on the map or whether you walk the perimeter of it
yeah.
and it tracks you, it'll tell you exactly how big that plot is. So why is that important? Well, look at fertilizer costs, look at fuel costs, look at seed costs.
Yeah.
It's going to get you in the ball game of exactly what you need as opposed to this is what I think I need.
Right. An estimation of having too little or too much and have to run back or do whatever and get more.
So many years I'd sit there and you really wouldn't know how much seed you put down until a month and a half later when you had full germination and you're like, oh, I put too much seed out.
You missed the big spot in the center.
Yeah.
yeah.
And how'd that happen?
Now they're all purple, you know, because there's not enough fertilizer. So,
yeah.
you know, just knowing how big the plots are and putting the exact amount of seed and fertilizer and mm-hmm. chemicals that you need, it'll save you a boatload just from that one tool.
Well, yeah. yeah input sure. costs are double right now compared
they
to
are.
A year ago. So just yeah. look at the value in that right there. It's pretty yeah. wild.
It is. It's insane how much that stuff is. So yeah. well, I want it exact, you know.
For sure.
I don't want to waste
you have
any.
To. Yeah, you can't you afford know? To buy too much or waste it. But it's like talking with Austin, it seems like every time we get traveling anywhere, Austin's a farmer, you're stressed out about rain because you live in like a kind of a unique spot where there's like a big bluff and it seems like everything cuts around you.
We've got a lot of sand and the bluff seems to push rains around us, so we miss a lot of rain. So I'm very familiar with irrigation systems.
Right, but it's, you know, you have plots where you can't get an irrigation system
right.
to, so now you can go on and see what you got for rain in your plot.
Yep.
And you know that that's important. It's nice
oh,
to
yeah,
know that stuff,
sure.
especially if you can't get to your plot out
right.
frequently.
You know, the cool thing about Reach, talking about Rain Station, one of our tools within the app to where you can place it wherever you want, and it'll give you an estimation of what you
yeah.
what rain you receive, but it'll also tell you the next 72 hours or the next 3 days forecast for precip,
mm-hmm.
which I think is just as important as what you got, because you really want to make decisions ahead of when the rain falls in
for
terms
sure.
of putting a plot in the ground or if you're going to top
yeah.
dress with fertilizer or anything else. So
mm-hmm.
I love both features, and then you can drop down further and historically see what you've received for the year and see whether
oh, nice.
You're
yeah.
ahead or behind. If you expand that box upwards, you can put in whatever date range you want and find out how much rain has fallen. Now, of course, it's a,
yeah.
it's an estimation based off of radar and prediction, but it's pretty dang close.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really nice.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. That's cool. Like, I didn't even know something like that existed before this update. But
yeah, it's you know, again, it's that laser focus on the whitetail hunter. What do they need? And it's not just about food plots. It's about access. Oh, it rained today.
Right.
How much did I get? Oh, it was 4 inches. That creek's going to be up, you know,
right. yeah, yeah.
stuff like that. Or I can't park where I normally do. I got to walk because the mud road's muddy. You know,
there's, yeah.
you know, precip is so important to everything we do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to monitor how much you got.
For sure.
Another example I always use is like you seed your plot and you see, you know, the radar come through and it's green and you go, oh, I got a good rain. You go to Rain Station. Oh, I got a tenth. Well,
yeah.
you know, did you get a germinating rain or did you get a rain that, you know, swelled your seed and you might have just ruined the whole planting,
right.
you know,
right.
depending on what you had planted. So
right, right.
Those, you know, seed swelling rains in the summer are very, very pesky when
yeah.
it comes mm-hmm. to food plotting. You really need, you know, half inch, 3/4 inch or an inch, you know, to get a good germinating rain.
Mm-hmm. See, that's like I'm learning more about food plots. Like I'm growing as a deer food plotter. I always say this on the podcast. I feel like, you know, when I think Eric can relate to me. When we read, Doug's the worst reader out of everybody.
Yep.
But when you read a paragraph and you feel like you understand it and then someone asks you what it said, and you're like, shit, I got to reread it.
Yep,
I feel that way with food plots. I don't know what it is. Like I have to constantly keep information flowing to my brain to like remember on processes and stuff. I don't know. Maybe I'm overcomplicating it, but I'm getting to the point where I'm getting more into them and getting my little equipment fleet to do little food plots and stuff like that. So rain gauge is going to be really useful for me. I'm doing my first plot. We got some box blinds we're putting up for the first time ever that we're going to set up. And we kind of, for this one particular plot, I've kind of mapped out way ahead of time entry and exit for the winds on to the plot with some screening and how my box blind's going to set up on to this plot. So I'm excited to use DeerCast throughout the season on this plot. But that's something I want to get into you about with you a little bit is, you know, hunting with blinds or whatever it may be, or designing food plot setups for entry and exit. Like, where do you even start to start thinking about how a food plot should be set up?
You know, I like to do a lot of scouting ahead of time, and I'm talking a year ahead of time. We've talked about this in previous podcasts, but I love pre-scouting an area. We just established a brand new plot on a farm that we pre-scouted it with three different cameras last year, a main scrape just above this bottom, another gap gate where the deer come and go, and then down in the bottom a water hole I had created, or we had created, and then there was two scrapes on the water hole. And we had cameras on all of it, and after the full season, we were like, we've got to have some more, another magnet here besides this water, because there's so many bucks using this area. A food plot here would be killer. So Carson's actually working on an episode right now for Deer Season 22 about the establishment of that new plot. And it was all because we scouted last season. So I have a tendency, I used to make decisions based off of just looking at the map and then boots on the ground scouting, which generally you can make good decisions that way. But if you really want to know what's going through that area and whether you think you can add food and make it better, you pre-scout it with a bunch of cameras, you know, for a full year. Don't even go in there. Just scout it with cameras and see what's happening.
Okay.
It's amazing what you'll learn, because I've done that in other spots. And it's not that great. And I'm like, I'm not wasting my time putting a plot here, because I've had some dingers, you know, where we put plots out and they just didn't produce like we anticipated they would.
Okay.
And so through time, you eliminate those types of spots and you start to gravitate towards the ones that there's, you know, a lot of deer movement through. And there's a lot of different factors that go into that.
So I just want to make sure I'm understanding. When you say you pre-scout, like if there's a lot of deer there, you're like, oh, a plot would do good here, like this in this specific area, or if you're not seeing a lot of deer activity, you're like, oh, we're not going to bother with the plot.
Is that not only that, when they're there and what age class is there at different times, because any given farm's DNA will develop to the point that there's certain farms that are great in October just because that's where they're at in, in October. Other farms that are great in September, and then others that are terrible until like December. Well, this farm was good in October and November, so I'm going to plant something there that is palatable to them in October, and November.
To get them to that spot during that time frame.
Yeah, because we're already there because of outlying issues and cover and and terrain and coming off of other big food sources, and we're just going to we're gonna smoke them there.
Focus on that for that time of year.
Those cameras didn't lie, and I mean they're in a lot of trouble in this new plot.
So, I mean, I know a lot of the reason why guys put plots in is like, well, you know, maybe it's good during that time of year, but I want them into December and January. I'm going to try and make a plot specific to get them off the neighbors in that spot. I mean, do you look at scouting any different for a plot for that purpose only, rather than to just capitalize on when you know they're there?
In that regard, like if the camera tells you that there's good thermal cover there and there's good south-facing slopes or east-facing slopes and you're getting a lot of deer in the late season, then I'm going to plant something accordingly. Or if I'm planting something that I'm trying to take advantage of October and November movement, I might add a product if the plot's big enough that is also appealing in December.
I got you.
But I'm going with radishes on this one.
Okay.
And I feel like we've got some destination fields not far away that'll take care of me in December. So I'm going far. Heart of the beast, where this plot is, radishes, October, November, it's going to be silly. I mean, it's going to be really good. And the other thing we do now is we design a lot of structure within the plots to get deer to come by within bow range. You know, because it's one thing to just put a plot anywhere.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean they're going to enter it and walk through it. So we're giving these deer, A, to walk through it, a reason to walk through it, B, a pinch point at about 30 yards with some brush that we cleared and took up the ridge and down into the bottom that's not too intrusive and not too tight. But yet should enhance, you know.
But if they don't have to think about it, they're just walking through, like, oh, got to go up this way.
They're going to naturally walk around it.
So, like, brush, like grasses and stuff like that, too, aligning, like, Interesting. Yeah. I know guys have done that. I was just curious like how you think about it.
We call it food plot architecture, but you know, we're really taking it to higher levels here with some of our plot designs.
Yeah, well, we've never really thought about too much food plot architecture. You had the most experience with it with some of the screening you planted for, because you have a box blind.
You can do it. Yeah, you can use screen. I mean, you can build fence. You can just naturally shape your plot in an hourglass. I mean, there's a lot of different things you can do to naturally bend deer to your location to get that shot.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I never thought about it. I mean, I thought about it, right? But I never thought about it
in detail
until, like, you know, I'm going to hunt out of a box blind this year, like low impact entry and exit, a place I could take my kids if I want, you know, that type of thing. But it seems like it's harder to move around than a tree stand. So I had to think about the winds, when deer are going to use it, all that stuff a little more.
We put them all on skids.
That's what you do?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of guys, I love that you guys do it, because just talking with you, like, you guys hunt a lot out of box blinds.
We do.
Do you guys get a lot of shit for that?
Oh, we do get a lot of beef about it. But we've also seen, you know, box blind sales soar nationwide in the last decade.
Yeah. That's not a bad thing.
No.
I think other people are seeing why we love them so much, which is, number one, it allows you a little bit more comfort in terms of shooting the breeze, you know. And,
Your podcast.
If you have a child.
Yeah.
Or
that's a big thing for me.
A new hunter. Mm-hmm. But most importantly, man, that scent profile, it just reduces it down to almost where you fool them all. You know, it depends on the wind speed, but we don't have many deer wind us anymore.
Yeah.
You know, we're still setting it up in a smart spot in terms of where our downwind direction is protected and not a lot of movement there. But even then, when you get swirling winds, like we're going to have some swirling winds down this bottom, it sure does, you know, really reduce that scent profile.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I'm excited to get into it and kind of see what it's about. I've never even hunted out of a legitimate box blind ever.
I haven't either.
Coming this fall. You killed your big one last year.
I've hunted for years out of them, and last year I finally got to shoot a big one out of a box blind, so that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
There's challenges to it, though, too. The heat in those things will knock you stiff, man.
Oh, I bet so.
They're brutal, because we keep our windows closed, and there's days where we're just like, open it, man. We can't take it anymore. I mean, it's like a car with the windows or the door shut, you know?
Yeah.
So heat is a big issue. However, conversely, in December, it heats up and it keeps you warmer. Trying to cool off is a challenge in the early season, and then keeping the windows from fogging. Yeah. And also, like,
what's the trick?
For us, we use Rain-X and we apply it very liberally, and then just let it go.
Run down.
You let it run down, and then about an hour or so later, when there's so much moisture in the blind, you got to wipe them off, dry them, and reapply. And it'll keep them clean enough to film out of. But most importantly, shooting out of a box blind, you have to practice from a sitting position, or if you're going to stand up, then you're only going out of the verticals in the corners.
Yeah.
But those deer can handcuff you so quickly out of that blind, whereas in a tree stand, you can shoot wherever. Out of a box blind, you're very limited where your windows are.
Yeah.
So make sure you take some time to practice out of it. Addition to that, if those windows, a horizontal window is fairly narrow, you can hit that bottom lip very easily. So make sure that you have your pin sight as close to the top window from your sight. Get it up top so that you're going to clear that bottom.
Yeah, okay. That's a good tip.
A lot of stuff to think about.
We actually cut the size of the window out of cordboard and then shoot through it practicing.
Oh, that's a good idea. That's a real good idea. Yeah. That's something we could do, is like trace it out before we get it up. Because in my head, I'm thinking with those, so it's horizontal windows in the middle, and then the vertical windows on the corners. Yeah. And so it's like I'm thinking I want the door towards my entry exit so I can get in and get out as quick and clean as possible. But then I'm thinking it's like, well, to my plot setup, where are those vertical windows? Because, you know, it's something I'm not going to hunt out all the time, when it works out, I'm going to be there.
Right.
Certainly.
So just a lot to think about that I'll realize, I'm sure, really quick.
The other tricky thing is getting that window open. Make sure that when you get there, you pop all the seals, wet them down so that they don't stick.
Pre-pop them.
Pre-pop them. Take some unscented soap mixed with water with you for any hinges that are squeaking.
Oh, okay.
And just those deer, when it's calm, like that last hour when they're really moving, or the first hour, and you barely open that window, if it pops.
Yeah, you got 50 gone. Of them at 50 yards.
Yeah, exactly.
Our buddy Mark Reif, he's got a box blind, and he's kind of a perfectionist, OCD a little bit. He cut all the windows out with his sawzall and put that tempered glass.
It's or like nitrogen-filled windows in there.
Yeah.
So they don't fog up.
So he didn't have any fog.
Nice.
He just got tired of squeegeeing his windows. But I don't know if he ever tried Rain-X.
Rain-X works pretty well.
So, okay, good tip. I find the more I – this is kind of going with summer scouting a little bit going into the fall, like guys that are hunting October. A lot of guys go in deep, and we might have talked about this on that episode a couple summers ago. And I find the more hunting experience I get and the more deer I see, the less time I spend in the timber.
Yeah.
Do you guys ever go in the timber anymore?
Not often.
Not often.
We do during the rut, mm-hmm. you know, when there are really a lot of transitional stuff, middle of the day.
Mm-hmm.
But early season and late season, because they're bedded and they're not moving a whole heck of a lot. So yeah. The more that you penetrate, the greater the risk of jumping a deer that you're not going to see on that sit.
Yeah, for sure.
So I don't hardly ever go in the timber, but boy, I'm as close to it as I can get. You know?
Yeah, yeah,
I'm tucked really close to cover in every setup we have.
Real quick, like going back to box blinds for a second, like have you noticed a difference? Like the height of your box blind makes a difference
in terms of them seeing you, or in terms of your shooting, or
in terms of like the deer noticing you or anything?
No, I mean, we have some that are sitting on the ground. It's really how you behave on the inside of the box. You know, if you give them a reason to look at the box, they're going to look at the box,
right?
You know, so, no, I mean, you know, the higher, the better in terms of much like a tree stand, mm-hmm. but most of these platforms are at about, 10 to 12 feet. It seems
Didn't you have one fall on you?
Yeah, yeah.
Like we were in it?
Bucktober, yeah. We did. We had an outrigger that popped, and Wade and I took a tumble.
How scary was that? Like,
sucked.
While you were falling, were you like, oh, shit, we're falling?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, because I had two arrows with rages on them.
Ooh.
You know, both of those got snapped. So
someone broke them.
You could have landed on one, man.
Absolutely. Yeah, both arrows got broken, too. So
did you guys get messed up from it or anything?
My back was hurting quite a bit. We both
How tall was it?
To the platform, that was a high rise hunter. It was probably 10 feet, 12 feet.
High enough, man.
Yeah. That's a long way to fall.
In a box when you're confined,
right?
Yeah. All the glass just shattered all over us. You know,
you guys like, man, you didn't get knocked out or nothing. Like, can you imagine smacking heads falling at 10 feet?
Well, and you probably got a bunch of equipment in there and everything else.
Oh yeah, everything.
Did everything get trashed?
Bows, guns, everything. So. We're like, well, shit. And we knew he was there, you know.
Yeah.
That's why we put the blind there on this side of the hill. So we were like, well, hunt's over. So, and it was Wade. He goes, should we check that card while we're in here? Because we never, we had no cell cams. And
yeah.
So this would have been 2015. And I was like, yeah, we better. So we grabbed the card. And
you guys are all concussed.
Oh, we are. Yeah. My back's killing me. We limp back to the damn truck. And we go to the house. And we put the card in, and he's all over at daylight on this scrape.
God. Way to make it worse, right?
Oh, we were like, we got to go set it back up. So we went and fixed the damn blind the same day it went down and took a bunch of 4x4s and made sure it could not.
Yeah.
You know, it was impossible. You know?
Yeah.
And then I killed him about a week later out of that blind.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy. So
an outrigger? Like you had like a support give out on you?
Yeah, this was a mobile one. So it was on a trailer that had these supports that would cam downward and then you could screw them up. You know, like a trailer hitch?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, one of those bolts when it, you know how like that cams into place and then
there's
it pops
a hinge
through?
Bolt. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That bolt sheared and it,
it
went over.
That would be, that's a nightmare zone right there. Yeah. I'm building my own wooden platform and I'm gonna make sure it's
secure right
but that I'm glad I asked you some of them questions though, like get some good input, because you know it might seem like it's a lazy way of hunting, it's there's nothing to it, you just hop in, but there's more to consider really
than... honestly I prefer sitting in a tree stand, you know, mm-hmm. because you feel a little bit more one with nature and you have a lot more freedom,
mobility, yeah.
And you feel the air, you know, and it's not nearly as hot in the early season, but, but from killing a damn deer, I mean,
yeah,
there is no substitution for it.
Well, it does kind of add, watching, your guys' videos, other people's videos, there is like a sense of like
separation.
No, not even that, but like urgency of like, I guess I'm trying to get my words out here. How to explain it? Like the camera, get it on camera. This window, oh, he's cutting over here. It's like
it's a pain in the rear.
It's like
now.
Suspenseful because it's like there's so much to juggle.
If you're a cameraman, you can't just swing around the tree and get him on the other side.
Yeah, you just fall.
The visibility is limited, and you spread two people apart, it changes.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And it's a it's something, you know, people give you crap about it, but it's difficult to get two people in a blind. A, you don't pop the blind or window to spook the deer. Mm-hmm. B, you're both on them. I mean, it can be very challenging. It's gun is much easier, but with a bow, it's challenging.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. You know, I guess I never thought about it in too much detail, but now thinking back on some of your guys' hunts I've watched, it's like, yeah, it's a juggle.
It's an art form in itself.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
It is. It's a different dynamic from trying to fool one in a tree stand. There's certain things that you do to scare them in a tree stand too, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
If your tree stand's popping or you move at the wrong time, you're going to get busted.
Right.
Box blinds are the same way.
Well, Eric's got a pretty unique thought on his what he's going to do with his box blind.
Yeah, so a buddy has an old gravity feed wagon that's already got a floor in it, so I was thinking about it's wide. It's not quite wide enough, so I'm going to cut one side out and just set it right in that so then I can pull it around if I need to or
absolutely,
you know, move it around.
Yeah, big time.
Yeah,
just
that's the
bolt it right to the floor and call it a day.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll work well.
I've always wanted a box blind and finally got one this year.
Having mobility with them is a huge deal. Just add skidders to your – or skids, big 4x4s, cut off the ends or 6x6s, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it'll make a sled and you can pull it wherever you want. I mean, they'll go wherever.
I should do something like that because I was going to put mine on 10-foot stilts and have it up there, but I guess I could.
You didn't get a platform for it from the manufacturer?
No, I'm going to build my own.
Yeah. Which, yeah, I would get a platform.
Idiot is what that just said right there.
Well, no, the platform's going to be probably more stable, last longer, and then you can skid it so easily and it'll go wherever.
I probably should do that.
Make sure that you then secure it wherever you end up with it.
Yeah.
Like, think of tent stakes like T-post all the way sunk with cables. Four different directions. It'll
tell you
withstand
what
a lot of wind. Otherwise, they'll go over.
And I want you to tell me if we're dumb or not. I went and got a big, long like ag anchor that I'm going to anchor down on the center of it.
It's great. I would still add the T-post. I've lost a lot to ag anchors where they yank right out.
Really? Okay, dang.
You get a lot of rain, and all of a sudden it's muddy. And
well, I was going to do that, and then I have two smaller ones I was going to put on each corner for the posts.
I've lost a lot with those.
Okay, good to know.
Take a T-post and sink
T-post. Sink it
5 feet. Try to pull it out. Do it at an angle like a tent post. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not coming out.
That's what my thought is on this gravity wagon also, because as long as I secure it to that, it ain't going to go anywhere.
No.
No, I'm scared. I got to go re-anchor all mine.
Yeah, because I talked to Austin about it. He's like, yeah, you just put one in the middle and they're fine.
Well, I've lost a bunch like that.
I've got four stakes on the four corners and then one in the middle, and I've never had any problems, but now I'm scared.
You will. I've lost them with that exact.
You will.
Anchor in the middle, four stakes, and I've lost a pile that way.
Yep.
Okay, well,
I'm going to go redo some blinds.
Look at these storms we get. You get 50 to 70 mile an hour winds. I mean, it's just.
Yeah, it's a big flag.
It's too big of a shear.
It's a giant sail up there in the air, is pretty much what it is.
All right, back to the drawing board then. Well, I just need to add more.
Well, just, you know, for the cost of cable and T-post, I mean, you know, you're not spending any money and, you know, securing a $3,000 or $4,000 blind.
I got some T-posts around. Yeah, I wonder if I could just set the T-post in, push it in with the tractor bucket.
That's what we do. Mm-hmm. And then we pull them with the tractor.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay. Well, then that's what I'll do. Then I'll still do my anchors I planned on doing, but I'll take it up a notch. Box blind tips from Mark Turry. It's valuable stuff, man. I mean, it's new. It's a new venture for us.
You get one to fall over. You learn how to secure them.
Definitely.
Daddy's not going to buy another one, so I'm gonna make sure it's right.
Yeah.
So
take care of the one you got.
But now I'm like, dang, I should put it on something that I can just move around. I need to find somebody with a gravity wagon and have it parked out there.
Yeah, right. We use those Omega lift systems from Keen, man. They're so easy because they'll fold flat. You can drive 70 mile an hour down the highway with them. Pop in and put them up. They're the bomb.
That'd be nice.
The ultimate mobility.
Yep. It is. Box blind. They're incredible.
Yeah, I ain't going to be pulling mine in those 70 mile an hour down the road, but.
but you can move it. You know?
You can move it.
But we're so spread out. I mean, we've got farms in Missouri and farms north of here, west and east of here. So it's nice to have the mobility.
Oh, yeah. The value's there. You can justify it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's something about hanging up a little hang on and jumping at it, too.
100%.
It's like, but that's like the different, you know, you get both. Like when it's brutal cold and. You know, less than ideal weather, you have an option.
Yeah.
You know?
Certainly, especially if you've got children involved. Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm excited for. It's like...
I mean, just getting out of that wind in December can be a huge thing.
Yeah.
Those sits where... Literally, there's sits where you go, yeah, man, it's brutal enough. I may not sit this tonight.
Yep.
Whereas you go jump in a box blind and the deer are moving like crazy.
It's made me soft.
It will.
That's what I'm worried about a little bit.
You get that windy day, you're like, man, a tree stand's not going to be much fun, but I got that box blind out there.
You can hide out in there. Yep. Box blinds get hated on pretty easily.
They do, and that's okay. I mean, I always say, look at it. I'm a results-oriented guy, and the results don't lie, man. We kill a lot of deer out of those blinds. Yeah. They just don't know you're there. That's the other thing. You don't get discovered nearly as often, so therefore repetitive hunting of the same spot, if your access is good, is much easier.
You can justify the value of one pretty quick for guys looking at like price tags of them, you know. And
certainly, yeah.
And it doesn't have to be always the top of the line deal. You can get what you can afford and get into something. Right?
Absolutely.
You know? I just think it's fun. It mixes it up. You know, you sit in a tree stand for 40 days in a row, you get kind of burnt out on it. But when you can jump back and forth between the box blind and the tree stand, it's just a different aspect, just a different view of the hunt. You know,
that's what I'm curious about. If it'll keep me fresher for longer. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I feel like I stay pretty positive mindset for a majority of the season. But
the one thing that they will do is make you a little lazy and a little sloppy. Like if you're in a tree stand, you're more heightened awareness, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas in a box blind, you're dozing off or looking at your phone and all of a sudden, boom, you know?
See, okay, that's always been my problem with like ground blinds. My visibility is cut down by so much that I'm like, on my phone, you know, and I'm like, shit, I need to pay attention.
Right.
Yep.
So that's why I never really preferred, but I always feel like it'd change if I was 10 foot up, that it might make me more attentive. Maybe not. We'll see.
Hey, we're going to find out, right?
And if you hunt with the windows closed, it does eliminate the audio of one walking in. You know?
Yeah, right? That's something to consider.
Which is, I mentioned the word separation a while ago. I thought that's where you were going. It does separate you. But it also separates them from you, you know, like they just do not detect you in those things, scent or anything else.
See,
like
that's
it's pretty amazing.
That's what I'm excited for, because I think where I have this food plot set up and designed out, that it's where deer, because I have a camera on it right now and there's nothing in it but my screening. I got to go in and till it still and do all that. And deer just naturally move through there anyway. And I think they do the majority of the seasons, just the way everything's laid out. So I'm excited, because I think once I get my food in there, that it's going to be dynamite. I think I'm going to see a lot of deer, you know, whether it's the buck I want to kill, who knows, but the fun factor of seeing the animal is going to be there, I think.
Absolutely. So they're magnets, man. You got the right food with a box blind. It's a heck of a spot to hunt. I know that, especially if it's tucked into cover, like your new farm there, where I was talking about that east corner over there. I mean, that I can't imagine that not being really good.
It's what we talked about. It's funny, because we haven't really done a podcast. We've talked about our farms. We meant to do we just bought a farm podcast. But when you looked at the farm with me before, I bought it, you know, and the opening, you're like, that's where you need to put something. It's the same place. You're like, well, that's where you need to put something. And I was like, I was going about the attitude, like, I'll hunt it for a year, see how deer are using it.
Which isn't a bad play either.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I guess it kind of goes back to what we talked about earlier in the podcast. It's like, you know, do a year of scouting on it. But I'm gonna put something in there.
I would. That one's kind of a no-brainer. I mean, that's just that's an awfully good spot.
It's a good pocket right by an ag field coming off cover. But what's cool about it, there's like a big berm that runs the whole side of it. Mm-hmm. So what I'm going to do is utilize, for that spot, I'm going to utilize that berm to maybe put some sort of platform in the side of the berm, and then put I don't know if I'll put a box blind there, but a ground blind or something on up high up that platform, maybe about 10 foot.
Yeah.
So, and I could see that whole plot from the berm. So it'd be kind of a neat, fun way to try and get it done on a spot with there's not a lot of tree stand options there.
A lot of willows and short trees.
It's all younger oaks.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
So there's probably one or two in there I could get in.
I bet you there's some deer in that sucker. Mm-hmm.
I would think that there is, Yeah, I got my first few trail cam pictures, just got trail cams out on it, and my first racked buck on it, little 8-pointer.
Good.
You know, but it's
awesome.
Neat to see, you know, you're
still
like,
exciting.
You're like, cool, that's on my farm.
On your farm, right?
Yeah. It gives you that like goosebump feeling. You're like, I'm not going to shoot that deer, but it's cool to know he's there.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
It's like a different perspective, you know. I was doing some mowing on the paths around it, and I seen a couple fawns get up, and I'm like, all chipper, you know. I'm like, look at that.
They're on my farm.
They're on my farm.
Well, yeah, you go from trying to kill everything to trying to preserve everything.
Stay here, you're safe.
It makes you more of a steward of the land for sure.
Certainly,
yeah. You got a little skin in the game now.
No doubt.
Well, you tell I'm getting a little older too, you know, because it's like got my new to me tractor, you know, and I'm like mowing out there. I'm like, I'm a land manager, baby, you know. It's like, I just enjoy being on my tractor, and now I nerd out over lawnmowers. And, you know what I mean? I'm like, oh man, he's got a bucket attachment.
Lucky.
Nice bucket on that tractor. You know what I mean? It's like,
absolutely.
As I'm getting into my 30s, like, stuff I didn't care about when I was in my 20s is like now really interesting and fun. And
it's a whole new meaning to that Kenny Chesney song too. She thinks my tractor's sexy.
That's right. Okay.
Play yeah. that. Blare it when you're when yeah. you're on it.
On my 22 horse Kubota.
It's still a tractor.
Hey, it's a tractor, that's right.
Waving at my wife while she's rolling her eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like
she thinks I look good. She's like, you're an yeah. idiot.
Got yeah. my shirt off with my dad bod and a Bush Light. What's up, honey?
Nothing wrong with that.
Hey, she married me. She knew what she was getting.
That's right.
Well, I think it was a fun podcast to talk. I mean, we talked more about box blinds than anything, but we've done one where we touched on some box blind stuff with Mark. Mark Reif, our buddy who cut off yep. the windows on his. But, you know, I think it's going to be neat to kind of hear our feedback as we go through the season for a new style of hunting.
Yeah, certainly.
You know, but
certainly.
There's more to it than I think people give credit to.
There's a lot to sure. it, man. The placement, the access, and all the other things we talked about, there's a lot to it. So in a lot of hours, you know, sometimes we get this comment, oh, you're always in a box blind, you're always over food plot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stick with what works. Yeah.
It works like a charm. Yep. It really does.
Yeah, and that's what I was getting through. It's like
but they got to be in the right place with the right access. You
know? Right, and then a lot of, like, I'm dedicating this blind to the spot if I go with my original plan of putting it on building my own platform. You know, now it wouldn't be that hard to take it down. You know, it's just
we seldom put one in a permanent spot anymore because we yeah. end up moving those suckers all the time. Yeah. So it's just like a tree stand. You think that's the tree and then, oh, I got to move, you know.
Got to be over mm-hmm. 50 yards that way.
Yeah, yeah, so it's nice to have mobility with them.
Right. Well, I'll
that's my whole idea about my plan. Put it on wheels.
Yeah, see, I thought about like an old hay wagon.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Or something, you know, too, yeah. But I wanted the height, you know, so. Yep.
That's where yeah, the gravity feed wagon's going to be.
We'll learn. Perfect, hey, if I don't like it, we'll change it.
That's right.
Hey, more reason to just play.
Just make sure you don't get so high that the electric lines get you, you know.
We don't
not
that.
Joking.
No, that's a serious thing to consider.
That sounds like an ask me how I know thing.
No. Oh. Thought through it. Just something to think through. Don't yep. get it so
falling
high.
Out
if
of
it's
them.
Mobile, don't just make sure you don't clip
yeah. lines. Yeah. That's something you'll have to worry about. I don't know how high up yours will be.
Yeah, it'll be pretty high. I mean, to the roof, you know. Yeah. It's probably 7 feet up plus the height of the blind, so.
Yeah, you should be okay. I think they're up there at like 14 or 15 feet, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think you're
I think a combine's like just shy of 14 foot, so we, yep. if I'm right on that. Is that right?
Yeah, you got to be careful when you got the hopper extension still folded up in a few places.
Have you ever took lines down in your combine?
I've never done it. My brother's done it, but I've never touched one. But got to be careful.
Yeah, got to be careful.
Yep.
Suck. Well, cool, Mark. Anything else you think we should cover quick for a cutout? We're not in a huge hurry, but.
No, I mean, if anybody that hasn't like seen anything about the app yet, go on to DeerCast or find our 13-minute reel where we talk about yeah. all the different features yeah. in there. Like they're pretty incredible. We talked about rain station and plot area and our wind checker. Like we took the wind checker and we have a cone of what your scent would probably look like, and then mm-hmm. we change that cone based on the speed of the wind,
yeah.
you know? So
that's huge.
And then very you could cool. check that across 5 days to see what your wind's doing across a 5 day mm-hmm. period.
That's cool.
I mean, it's pretty advanced. Like I said, yeah. there's a lot of different aspects to it. You can tell a deer hunter
yeah.
worked on that, you know?
Oh, for sure.
Just differentiate us.
Yeah. I'd say just download and start playing around with mm-hmm. it. You're going to find so many different avenues on there that yeah. are going to fit your cool. needs. Yeah.
Well, that too for visual learners, like wind. You're sitting in a spot, you can play with that yep. and see what your wind's doing. Like that's huge, I think. It yeah. helps you understand how it's actually what direction it actually is going. Right.
And how wide is my cone? You know, mm-hmm. there's a big difference between a 13-mile-an-hour wind, which is just the ideal speed, you know, it's yeah. going in a consistent direction mm-hmm. versus a variable 25 where it's doing this and whipping right. or like a 2 to 4 where it's going every different yeah. direction, you know. I really hate those winds.
It's great because you can hear, but it sucks because you know it's just a disaster for your scent.
It's terrible. That and the deer keyed up because they hear every single thing. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. I love a steady, consistent wind. They're so much more killable.
13's the magic.
You know, if I had to pick, I love like 10 to 17, somewhere in really? There. 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. I love that speed.
It seems like in Illinois we don't get anything under 5 very often, a few days right. a year, but it just seems like it's
always
high.
Boy, when you do, they are on alert.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They do not like those calm winds.
Well, you imagine everything's trying to kill you.
That, and they're so keyed up because they hear everything.
Yeah.
Everything,
yeah.
They're very alert.
I was, you know, in high winds, real quick before we cut this one off, do you notice deer still moving like the extreme winds, like, I don't know, what would be extreme, 30 plus?
It will start to shut them down, but you know, it depends on the time of the year and the topography. And like, mm-hmm. I've had sits with multiple guys out and go to different spots, and the guys down on the bottoms had amazing sits, and the guys up on the ridges saw very little. So they're not stupid. They know how to shelter from the wind just we do. Yeah. So when those wind speeds get really high, I used to always think, they're not going to move tonight. I just go somewhere where I think they will move, and I have much better sits down in those bottoms.
Get out of the wind.
Yeah, I always try to think about it like, man, if everything was trying to kill me and then everything is moving crazy in the woods, how stressful would that be? You know what I mean?
The trees are moving and everything's just everything's going nuts.
It would just be uncomfortable, I feel like.
But if you think about what those winds are accompanying, it's oftentimes a major front. And, you know, their internal will to survive is going to get them on feed. So. But I have seen really, really high winds, like over 40, kind of really diminish the movement. But 20s, that really doesn't bother me at all. I don't mind a 25-mile-an-hour wind, actually, especially if it's out on the northwest. They'll move, but they might be a little bit later. You know, it might subdue them.
Yeah,
they may not move as far, but they're still going to feed if it's accompanying a big front.
Right. Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just make sure you're not in a tree this big and you're hang on, getting something a little.
I've been there. Sketchy.
Where you're doing this and you're holding on. Yeah, not fun, but you got to get out there.
Yeah, that's not much fun at all.
No, I hate it. That's the worst. You're holding on. You got that feeling every time the wind blows real hard.
I should say I took the stand out after that sit.
Really?
Yeah, because I was like the only tree in that. There's a little plot there, and I'm like, oh, this could be perfect.
Yeah.
Went out there on a windy day, and like, yeah, every time it blows, you're like.
It's my biggest fear when I was a little kid getting used to like hang-ons. It's like, I'm going to fall. The tree's going to fall. You know, freaking out, just scaring yourself more than you even needed to be. So.
Well, the stats don't lie. A lot of people fall every year. You know?
They do.
Less and less since the advent of the full body harnesses and the safe lines and the life lines. I mean, that's a huge, huge, huge improvement over the way it was 25 years ago.
I don't know if I've ever now, I have lifeline and everything now or whatever you want to call it from the ground up. But before that, I always had at least a tree stand harness in the tree, you know, but never, not always hooked up from the ground to the tree stand. So, but I got kids now. I got to think about it a little more.
Yep, makes a difference.
It matters if I die now.
Well, as you age, you think of things differently, right?
For sure.
You're much more risk averse, and that's part of it.
So. Dude, I want one more day on that orange tractor with my belly out, you know?
Yeah, big time.
Hey, drink one more beer.
That's right. Yeah. All right, Mark. Well, appreciate it. Thanks for having us.
Yep. Thanks for having us down.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it very much.
It's fun. Learned a lot, actually. I did.
Yeah.
So thanks, everyone.
We kind of pivoted from food plot to box blind.
I guess it's just like the perk of interest right now, naturally, you know, but that's what's fun about it.
Yeah.
But also it's like if someone wants to get a box blind, things to think about.
Yeah. It's definitely,
you know,
there's things to get. I mean, we love our muddies and we love our hawks and, I mean, we've killed a pile of deer out of them, you know. And
yeah.
There's a price tag that goes with them, but at the end of the day, it's going to last longer. It's going to keep you safe.
Yeah.
There's another thing. Safety in terms of box blinds does help. We talked about me falling out of one, but that was a weird occurrence.
Where's your harness on that one?
Mark? Yeah, right?
Hey, now we know how to stake them down, though.
Yeah. There's a ton of great blinds. Now we know how to stake them down, but there's a ton of great blinds out there. Like we went grizzly, you know, but I mean, I know you guys had great luck with the brands you guys run, and I know you've ran a separate brand in the past.
I think we've all ran a little bit of everything.
Yeah. So. I think the top ones would be the top sellers would be Muddy Hawk or Redneck would be the ones that I see the most.
Yeah. Grizzly makes a
really nice blind, but it's quite pricey if I'm not mistaken.
It's a little expensive, but it's got everything you want.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not missing anything for sure. So but you don't have to do it that way. You can you can get it without it, then add stuff later.
I like that Hawk Office, man. That thing is a Cadillac.
I haven't seen that.
Really, really nice metal sides. I mean, it's lifetime guarantee. I mean, it'll last forever.
Really? Well, I think Mark's got. Mark might have some kind of Redneck. Mark Rife, our buddy that cut the windows.
I can't remember which one he had,
but they're fun. I mean, they have options for everybody, but you know, get what you want to get into, and then start with the base model, and then upgrade as you see fit as you hunt out of it. You know, like you can add accessories, like to the ones we're running. You can add on the different stuff, like, you know, whatever it is, shelving.
Little shelves in there, the flooring.
Shades and stuff like that, flooring and all that. So, well, cool. Well, thanks for having us. Thanks, everyone, tuning in, listening, watching. We appreciate you. Go shoot a giant. Go shoot your bow. Later.